Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. I'm so delighted to introduce our special guest this morning, Dr. David Alter. Hello, David.
Hello, Ron. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. We haven't talked in person forever because of COVID, I guess. Seems like forever.
It's been a few years. Yes.
Yes. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you. Dr. David Alter is a clinical psychologist who is in private practice at Minneapolis, Minnesota, at Partners in Healing of Minneapolis. It's an integrative health clinic he founded in 1999. He received his doctorate from the Rosalind Franklin School of Science and Medicine in North Chicago in 1991. And his primary areas of study have been in neuropsychology and health psychology, and these are two fields that enabled him to explore the intersection of brain, mind, body, and social connection, and how these aspects support health are expressed as symptoms, illness, or disease. David Alter has studied and taught other health professionals about how clinicians can influence mind-body interpersonal interactions to elicit health-promoting adaptations that draw on our biological, psychological, and social evolutionary resources. And Dr. Alter is also a published author of a book on healthy aging. It's called Staying Sharp, 9 Keys to a Youthful Brain Through Modern Science and Ageless Wisdom. And he's also written lots of articles and book chapters. And we actually met through the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. And when he's not engaged in professional pursuits, Dr. Alter explores the natural world, which feeds his passion for photography and videography, and spending time with his growing family. So welcome, David.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you again for joining us. I love to ask the guests on the show how they ended up in their careers, because many of my patients are adolescents and young adults trying to figure themselves out, and it's been incredible to hear people's journeys to where they are today. So can you explain how you ended up being a clinical psychologist?
Sure, I'll be happy to walk you down that road. I am the oldest of the siblings in my family. My mother was a teacher, and my father a physician, a neurologist, but his area of interest was academic research. He helped co-found the field of neuroepidemiology, or how illness and disease shows up in populations. So I grew up in this house where the idea of learning, teaching, researching questions was just part of the atmosphere in the house on a day-to-day basis. And I was really drawn initially to the idea of the neurology, the physical body. But as I got older, I kept finding myself asking the question, but what makes that physical body do this instead of that? What influences our choices and our preferences, and what helps people get into trouble and what helps people get out of trouble? So I found myself moving from an interest in brain to an interest in the mind, which to me is the thing that gives meaning and direction and purpose to the body, including the brain. So it led me more and more into psychology, and I sort of took my dad's research-oriented mind and my mother's ability to teach, and I found my way into a field where I get to do both. I get to explore different ideas and teach other professionals and do some teaching work with my own clients. And now, many decades later, here I am talking to you.
So it sounds like it was a fairly straightforward road for you. You had this idea in as a teenager or as a college student?
I think that in high school it began to take a solid shape. I sense that I want to really understand what the mind is and what it does. So, yeah, I think it was a reasonably straightforward path. I pursued that in college and then in graduate school and have stayed with it for what's now a 35-year career.
Time flies, hey.
You're not kidding.
I want to drill down on your understanding of the mind, because you're a neuropsychologist, and this has been your interest for decades. So is the mind, let's start with a very big question, is the mind all local, or is there also a non-local mind in your mind?
I think that mind to me is a word that has many, many synonyms that I think are connected to it. Mind, consciousness, connection, awareness. And I think they all represent different facets of what is not localized inside our skin, inside the body. I very much believe and have seen in my clinical work that there are things that link us together that are not reducible to the organ called the brain. So I definitely think it's non-local. Part of what has really fueled my interest in nature and photography is that when we are out in nature, we start to get a sense, literally a sense, of interconnection, of deep levels of connection. A simple example is that a rampant problem is sleep disturbance, insomnia of one form or another. Now, you take a person who has struggled with insomnia for sometimes years, if they spend a good week to 10 days going to bed when the sun goes down and rising with the sun in the morning, there is a re-regulating of their biological rhythms, and many times that helps with restoration of restorative sleep. So what is that? That to me is an example of connection of the larger mind of nature that's talking to us and us to it in a way that moves us back toward healthy rhythms that help support our good long-term health. So the short answer to your question, Ron, in my view, is that mind is not restricted to what's inside the skull.
Beautiful. And it ties in a lot of who you are and what you do. So let's say the mind of nature, is that energy or is it something else? Is there thought behind it?
I think the most honest answer is I'm not sure. There does seem to be wisdom in the natural rhythms that abound in nature. I think even if we think of a relationship, an intimate relationship between two adults, there is a wisdom in the rhythms that regulate how they relate to each other that I think goes deeper than just the biology. So I think energy is part of it. And then there are these other layers of connection that I don't really know yet how to explain them. Even the word energy may capture some of it, but I suspect in the end it's a word that doesn't capture all of it. We're connected in many ways, in many different layers, and only a small fraction of that is something we're even consciously self-aware about. We're influencing each other all the time in ways that go outside the brain, let's put it that way.
You may not be surprised that what you just answered was a question I'm about to ask, because it's happening between us even as we speak. I've felt when two people get together, especially if they have some connection, that they, I've described it as almost creating a third mind, whatever that means. Does that ring any bells to you?
I didn't hear the last part. You said...
So when two people get together, especially if they've been previously connected, it's almost like a third mind is formed between them, like a different entity separate from the two people. Have you ever felt something like that?
I have personally felt it, and it's actually something that's been written up in the literature. The person who ultimately developed what came to be the EEG, the electroencephalogram, was in World War I when I think the horse he was riding was shot out from under him. And he falls, the horse falls, and he's on the ground. And at the same moment, his sister awakens with this sense of dread that something had happened to her brother. And they later learned that she awakened at the moment that he was injured in this incident in World War I. And I think he spent many decades trying to understand what that non-conscious, non-local connection was between him and her. Now, he didn't find it. He ended up inventing or helping contribute to the invention of the EEG. So that's an example written up in the literature. But I've certainly had the feeling. In fact, unfortunately, this most recent example was between September 1st and September 4th. I got a call from my sister, who lives in Philadelphia, that my mother was not doing well. We discussed, she was in her 90s, is this a serious situation? Should I get out there? I don't know. We've seen this so many times before. If you think you should come out, then go ahead and make the reservation, fly out. And I just sat with myself for a while trying to listen to what the message is that I needed to listen to. I made a reservation. I got to Philadelphia. I walked into the room. Within 2 hours, she passed away. So I listened to something that I can't reduce to words or a simple explanation, but I felt it as recently as earlier this month that I need to listen to a connection that involves maybe what you're describing of the third mind that grew up out of the connection between the woman who brought me into the world.
And as you're sharing this with us, the first thing I wanted to say, well, I'm sorry for your loss, but that seemed kind of empty, because the level that we're talking now, the loss isn't the loss of the body of the person, but isn't there still a connection even beyond death?
I think that there is. I lost my father 8 years ago, and there are often moments where I sense that I'm being influenced, my thoughts are being shaped, my decisions are being influenced by someone who's no longer physically here. When I think about the definition of grieving, or a definition of grieving, I think it involves the transformation of a physical connection into an emotional or an energetic connection. Because that's portable. I can carry that, and I think I will carry that with me for the rest of my days, even though physically both of my parents are now gone. So I would agree with you. I think it is, there is something that remains.
And I've worked in the recent years, I lost my father about 10 years ago as well. My mother, thankfully, is still here. But I have looked for that kind of connection of people who are still alive, and both when I'm with them in person and when I'm not. And there's something there. There's if you, I think if you become aware of it and open yourself up to it, you can feel that connection and be influenced in a good way by it.
Well, I think that those... I've done a little bit of reading about what people who've been married for many, many, many years describe when they've lost their spouse or their life partner. And it's amazing how often people will describe the sense that there's a gaping hole that used to be filled when the person was in the world. Or they'll say, it feels as if a part of me has been amputated. And I think when you take a look at some of the brain wave patterns or the cardiac rhythm patterns, you actually see that there is something that came to include the other person. It's sort of the way in which the person was embodied inside that person's mind and brain. And it's still there, except the physical person isn't there anymore. So there's some sort of imprint of that person's life that we carry with us. And I don't know how to explain it, but somehow, as we form these deep connections with each other, we literally leave an imprint, an impression, in the other and they in us that we carry. And as you said, it influences us. It speaks to us days and months and years later in a way where we can honestly say, I'm trying to live my life in accord with what so-and-so would have wanted or wished. I think it's a powerful way that we can stay connected to people that have meant so much to us, even when they're no longer here.
One of the things that I've done with patients who have lost loved ones, and even with myself, is teach them to interact in a hypnotic state with the loved one who has passed. And that seems to oftentimes change the dynamic within the living individual. I wonder what happens to the gaping wounds at that point. Have you had experience with that?
I think it gives it a different direction. So when hypnosis is so good at playing with time, because so far as we know, we're the only creature who are constantly living in a time capsule that can move forward in time or backward in time just by thinking about it. So something I've often done when people are dealing with different forms of grief, or when I'm dealing with people, let's say, who have a cancer that looks like it is going to take their life, I can go back with someone who's lost a loved one and reconnect them with tremendous memories, supportive memories, pivotal memories, and bring those memories back into the present. Not just the memory, but the full three-dimensional aspect of that memory. And they feel a deeper connection that can then influence how they live their life going forward. It has a positive impact on grieving. Or with people who are facing death, I can go forward in time, beyond the time when they're no longer in the world, and have them look back with a sense of wonder and pride at the legacy they've left behind, and to imagine children or grandchildren making decisions that would make the individual who's imagining life after their death, if you will, proud. And it also helps them deal with the days or weeks or months before they pass from the world, because they've transcended the limits of temporal time and they can move forward to a future memory, look back on it, and bring that into the present so that they can deal with their dying process more effectively. So that would be my version of what you're describing.
Yes. So, you know, I'm really interested in the subconscious. And the way I would talk about subconscious is that it has access to both our brain and the non-local mind. And I'm wondering how your comment on that also. What is the overlap between what I'm describing as subconscious / non-local mind with soul or spirit?
From my perspective, soul and spirit are, in a sense, synonyms or euphemisms for the general topic that we're discussing. soul and spirit often get us into the world of religious belief, spiritual belief, the nature of God or the divine. I don't really know where I stand on that. So I think of those words as connecting me, soul and spirit, connecting me to this sense that there is something larger than us, that we are deeply connected to, are invited to be deeply connected to, and to take that in and use that as almost an intuitive scope, an intuitive gyroscope to help us make effective decisions and take effective actions in our day-to-day life. So I don't use those words as much, or if I do, I use them in the way that I just described.
Yeah. I've just finished interviewing 20 subconsciouses and asking them, that will talk to me verbally, and ask them such questions like, what are you or who are you? And I've been told between soul, spirit, part of God, it's all in that realm, which I think is buried in a lot of us, or not buried, but is found within a lot of us. Well, this is fascinating. I'm looking forward so much to asking you more questions right after the break. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Unbar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Unbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Unbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar, our special guest, and Dr. David Alter, who's sharing some of his knowledge about mind, body, spirit, social connections. David, I'm just wondering, so we have this intricate system that makes us human. How would you explain the mind-body connection, especially when things start going wrong in the body? Why does that happen from your perspective?
I hear two different questions. One is, what is the nature, or how do you describe the nature of the links, the connections between mind and body? And then why do illnesses exist? Why do things break down? Why does that happen? So in terms of the first part, I think that a lot of my thinking has developed from an understanding, even a sense of awe, about evolutionary biology. So I think that for me, we began as one-celled creatures, and even before that. So there was some way in which whatever that creature was that existed billions of years ago, it began to need to have an awareness of its internal space and the space around it, and eventually to be able to move in that space in order to survive. Eventually, that became so complex that it needed a brain to be able to help it move around and navigate in the outside world and to manage its internal world. Still later, with even more complexity, there was this emergence of sort of a meta level, which I think I call mind, that brings us into a deeper and deeper connection to our inner world and the world around us. And so whatever you and I might call mind or connection or subconscious or greater awareness, I think it is a sort of emergent property of human beings that connects us to what was always there long before we developed the ability to perceive it, right? There's, we know studying astronomy that a lot of what we see out when we look up into the night sky was there billions and billions of years long before human beings even came into existence. So I think mind and body are an emergent process that came out of eons of history where we came to be increasingly complex creatures that can think and sense and move and navigate and relate and connect. So we're a step on the journey to whatever comes next, but that's how I would say mind and body are linked. So why do things go wrong? Well, I think the sad truth is that none of us who are organic creatures are designed to be here forever. Things are going wrong all the time, and in a sense, it's a miracle that we last a day, let alone 80 or 90 years. I think that our human body, for example, produces up to 10,000 or even 100,000 cancer cells per day, but the body is designed to identify them and eliminate them, and we go on to live our lives. We're an enormously complex creature, an intricate creature, and with increased complexity, the odds of things going wrong go up. So to me, the awesomeness is that we don't succumb to that most of the time. But sometimes we do, whether it's an inflammatory condition or a tumor or a stroke or the buildup of cholesterol or whatever it is. They're inevitable when we're dealing with something as complex as you and I are. The real miracle is that we still, despite that, are able to live joyfully and satisfyingly for, on average, more than 80 years. So that's my reaction.
Interesting. But we also know that the mind can affect the brain and the body's function in both helpful and unhelpful ways.
Yes.
What do you say?
And that's what you and I do on a day-to-day basis.
Can you say a bit more?
I think that what you're raising is the question of influence. So we're not simply passive vessels. We can influence through the mind how the body is going, the decisions and actions we take on a day-to-day basis for good or not for good. When people develop an illness process, I have done a lot of work with digestive disorders, so when something in that 25-foot-long tube begins to act up, we don't have to simply remain passive victims of that. We're able to activate the inbuilt, inborn connections between mind, brain, and body to influence that system in a positive direction, whether that involves evoking a different state of arousal, a parasympathetic state of arousal, or regulating sympathetic energy bursts, or whether being able to bring to mind some of the factors that may have been in our day-to-day life, traumas of one sort or another, that may have influenced the emergence or development of the digestive problem in the first place. The point is, whatever is contributing to that illness experience, we retain the capacity to influence it by engaging the mind in the direction of bringing that runaway system back into healthy balance with every other part of our mind-body being that in an ideal state is following normal and healthy rhythms. So I think, I don't know if I'm, maybe I'll just stop there and make sure that I'm addressing the question that you raised, but to me it comes down to using influence of the mind to bring the body back into a healthier, balanced state.
Yes, and I know we use different tools to influence. We use our words, we use imagery, we use action. I wonder if you could comment on, let's say you have an inflammatory bowel disease and you suggest imagery of firemen pouring water on it, and it helps the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Is that imagery taking effect in the brain? Is it taking effect in the body, the mind? How do you think about that?
I think to say, to localize it as taking place in the brain is too reductionistic. I think that we're an interconnected system. So the image that you gave of firemen pouring cool water on a hot fire has the element of influence and control, cooling, success, restoration. There are so many different levels that different parts of the body system, the integrated body system, each get activated in support of that direction, and the result is a quieting or a cooling of a runaway inflammatory process.
Fascinating, and still not well understood as far as I'm concerned, but I think you're right. I guess my question to my mind is it also affecting the mind? I suspect so, in addition to the brain and the body, as we discussed. Well, when we come back from the break, you are an author of a book, 9 Keys to a Youthful Brain Through Modern Science. I want to interview that because that's of increasing relevance, I guess, to all of us, but especially to me. This is A Center Point with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Sunday Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest, Dr. David Alter, is teaching us about mind, body, and spirit, brain. And so, what's the keys to a youthful brain? I've also been in practice for 35, 40 years, so it's becoming more relevant to ask that question.
Well, I think that the emphasis of the book is on a youthful brain, meaning whether it is a 40-year-old or 60-year-old or 80-year-old brain, there's still ways of living youthfully. So what are some of those ways? My co-author and I found is that some of the most important practices or habits involve things that are best described as physical. Number two, that are best described as living in the emotional realm. And number three, as existing in the realm of social connection. So at the physical level, there are things that we need to be doing. Examples simply are that the body is designed to move, and after moving, it needs to rest. And in order to be able to move and rest, it needs good energy. So we talk about the importance of nutrition, good quality sleep, and activity. Not necessarily exercise. People get too hung up on how many push-ups should I do. But it's more about being active, remaining in motion. And if we move into the second, the relational realm, we talk about empathy. We talk about the importance of orienting toward activities that bring a sense of joyfulness and fulfillment, a sense of purpose and direction. People who have that, probably the most famous example is a Austrian psychiatrist named Viktor Frankl, who was imprisoned in Auschwitz because he was a Jew. And he found that among those who had a sense, even in that hell on earth, of a sense of purpose and direction, they tended to survive longer, even to the point that they lived out the war and were liberated, as compared to those who gave in to despair. So a state of mind that is oriented toward resilience and empathy and purpose made a big difference in terms of maintaining a healthier brain. From a social connection point of view, simply put, we found that those who live in an environment with healthy social connections to others, I'm not talking about the number of friends you have on Facebook. That's, in my view, BS. I think those are superficial, empty connections for the most part. I'm talking about true connections that involve knowing and being known, reading the other and being read by the other. And it has a tremendous protective effect. Maybe the most dramatic example our research came across is in what's called the NUN, N-U-N study, of a community of nuns who, when they got to be of a certain age, lived in a community with other retired nuns. And after they passed on, they went through autopsies, and many, many of them exhibited physical signs in their brains of dementia, but they did not express symptoms of dementia. In other words, the community of connection, intimate, lifelong connections, actually had a protective effect in their ability to live as though they didn't have dementing disease. So I can't think of a more profound example that highlights the importance of social connection to be able to have a youthful brain regardless of our age.
That's really cool. I guess you wrote a book about it. So I want to ask, how do you teach someone resilience or empathy? How do you help people develop those abilities?
I would say resilience to me is an example of trust in the mind-body connection, right? That your body, my body, are designed to be able to sustain, absorb injury, and to rebound. So there, whether that injury is literally a broken bone from a bad run down the mountain on skis, or it's an assault in a woman who's been victimized, or some other example, the capacity of the world to be difficult and hurtful exists, but right along with that is the capacity to rebound and recover with support, and that's resilience. So to develop trust in that is something that's an important part of my practice, to help people learn to recover and redevelop a sense of their innate resilience. Empathy to me is, in a sense, the opposite. It's externally directed. So to be empathic means that I'm recognizing that I am not an island, that there are others who are like me, and there are others who are not like me on the surface, but if I go beneath that, I'll find our common underlying connection, our common underlying humanity. And when I look to step into their shoes so that I can really get a sense of what it's like to be them, then I open up the full width of the interpersonal connection, a back and forth process, where I strengthen them and they strengthen me in return. I support them and they support me in return. And that empathic flow is part of how we gain the ability to remain healthy, to recover from adversity, etc. I think that Carl Rogers, the famous psychologist who came up with the idea of unconditional positive regard, described empathy as the capacity to step literally into the shoes of the other and then to step out again. And I think that sense of oscillation, stepping in and stepping back, connecting and disconnecting, that is the rhythm, the basic human rhythm of social connection. And when we practice that, being curious, asking questions, inviting the other to ask questions of us, like I said before, we open up a wider channel between us and the other that enriches us and enriches them in return. And I think that's a fundamental part of what it means to be fully human.
And how do you help an individual, a patient, client of yours, who, let's say, shows social anxiety and afraid of being judged, afraid of being vulnerable, how do you help them cross that hurdle?
Okay, that's a great question. If someone is experiencing social anxiety, I think in many ways there's two elements of that. One is their own self-judgment about what others will think. So I dare not reach out to others because I know who I am, and they'll see who I am. They'll discover that I'm unworthy or undeserving. Or it's the opposite, where if I reach out to others, they're going to find in me something that's lacking or wanting. So some of what I do clinically is I'll work with those belief systems to find exceptions to the rule. Sometimes I'll do that by going back into their history to find exceptions to that rule and then amplify it. Sometimes I'll create scenarios using imagination, that's an exception to the rule, and then find ways of amplifying that, not just cognitively, but in an embodied way, to think it, to feel it, to be it. And as a person does that, it can, over time, become a new felt sense of who they are, and it helps reduce the anxiety and emboldens them to take action out in the world to overcome that social anxiety or social disconnection.
Thank you for teaching us that. That was really helpful. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens a way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Dr. David Alter, sharing a lot of his life wisdom with us. And David, I wonder if you would be willing to take us on a nature trip with you. Could you describe, take us, imagine time you are in nature and describe what we might see, narrate us for such an experience?
Okay. I drive out of the city. The buildings give way to farms, the farms give way to fields, the fields give way to trees and forests or lakes, and it's less and less populated, there's less and less evidence of human habitation. And eventually you find your way to a road that takes you deeper into the forest, maybe along the path of a river or a stream, until eventually you arrive at the location where you're going to set up camp. You begin to take things out of your vehicle. You take out your pack. You take out the other things that you brought with you. And the first thing that you do is you reconnoiter. You begin to look around to find the boundaries of the area where you are. Is the land flat? Does it fall away? Where is the nearest water source? You begin to find that your senses come alive. You start to feel the air, the breeze. You start to notice the scent that's carried on the breeze. You begin to hear the sounds all around you, different sounds as your foot falls on the forest floor, sounds of birds, sounds of the wind in the trees, the sound of the water moving in the river. You begin to see colors differently, many colors, and yet they all fit together in this beautiful palette that we call our natural environment. And then after getting a sense of where you are and your place in it, you set up your tent. And then at some point, at least in my experience, I enter the tent. I take off my boots. I have laid out my pad and my sleeping bag, my pillow, and I lay there on my back, my eyes closed, but my senses wide awake, feeling a deep sense of being at home, as though I've come home to a place that has been waiting for me for eons of time. I begin to feel my shoulders relaxing, my breath slowing and deepening, my nostrils widening as I feel I am at home. I'm being welcomed into this ancient environment in a way that I feel I'm at peace, and in a way that makes me feel there is peace within me. My thoughts begin to be more peaceful thoughts. My fears give way to comfort, to excitement, to curiosity, to a sense of wonder. A sense that I am just a small being in a much larger world that has welcomed me home. And that's how I will begin my sojourn in nature, eventually emerging from my tent to begin preparing a meal, usually after preparing a fire, listening to the crackle, the smell of the smoke, the wood burning, the food cooking on the fire that I've built. And time changes. It slows down. The worries, the fears, they drop away. That's usually when I will take out my journal and my pen, and I'll sit and begin to capture, to muse, to wonder about where I am, my place in the world, my place in my life, and I write and I write and I write. As the day gives way to evening and the evening to night, my belly full, it's almost time to retire. I go into my tent and I can say out loud, it's good, good night, all is well, and I drift off to sleep.
I think I went with you. Have you written this? Is this poetic, David?
I have captured aspects of it in one of the photography books that I've published that captures 100 photos of 15 years of travels in nature, each photograph accompanied by a quote from some of the books I've read about nature. So when I get into this space, those ideas and those images and those words start to flow, and that's what I just shared with you.
You talked about this earlier in the show. You seem to be more in rhythm with nature as you do this.
It's a reset button for me. It's I find that life at my age, with a busy practice and a political climate in the U.S. and around the world that's terribly disturbing and running counter to many of the things that I've spent my whole life working to prevent, it's very disheartening to feel that, in a sense, on a given day, it can feel as if it's all coming apart, and I worry about my children and my grandchildren, and is this really the world that I'm leaving them? Is this the best we could have done? So I get worried, and I get scared, and I get down, and things look dark. So when I go to nature, it's a very powerful reset or reboot for me to be able to recognize that I'm among things, trees and the ground and the water, that has been here a lot longer than political campaigns and election cycles and conflicts in the Middle East. And so it helps me recognize this too shall pass. It will be okay. Maybe not next week, maybe not next month, but things will work out in the end. So I come back from these trips more energized, more engaged, ready to do what I'm able to do. I can't do everything, but I'm able to do what is within my reach to be able to affect positively, and then it helps me re-engage in my day-to-day life.
Can you compare the physical experience of being in nature as to, let's say, the hypnotic experience of being in nature?
I think it's very similar for me. In fact, I draw on my years of experience in nature when I'm working with clients, bringing up images, using images that are relevant to them that have a nature basis. I often talk about nature's healing rhythms. So whether it's the rhythm of sunrise and sunset and moonrise, whether it's the rhythm of the seasons, whether it's the rhythm, there are so many different rhythms in nature that people can connect with. And I think there's good scientific evidence of how healing that is. There's a Japanese term that in English means forest bathing that shows that when people spend up to 20 minutes walking leisurely in nature, immune inflammatory responses diminish, breath slows, heart rate decreases, blood pressure decreases, digestive systems, peristaltic motion begins to be more aligned with healthy rhythms. So I think the evidence is pretty clear that nature's rhythms are healing. So when I do hypnotic work with clients, I draw on those rhythms in the way that I talk with clients and engage them in that process to evoke from them their capacity to produce those kind of healing rhythms.
Right. I think that it draws on the idea that this is part of our non-local mind as we started off the show. David,
I think
thank
you're
you
right.
so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for teaching us this all. I learned a lot, and I really, really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us.
Ron, it was a pleasure being with you. As always, I one takeaway for me is, my goodness, I haven't seen Ron in far too long, so you're motivating me to figure out when we can reconnect.
I love it. I wish everyone an excellent week. Go check out nature. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anbar.